And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Son of Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luka. The timing sucks cause the Mavs are ass. But did you see his no-look pass? Whoa! 77 minutes in heaven.
Welcome to 77 Minutes, the Dallas Mavericks podcast, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Tim Cato. I write about the Mavericks. Did write about the Mavericks this Monday morning. And I think I'm really just going to kind of turn it over to Dave. We've got Dave and Mike, but I'm just going to kind of let Dave run the ship here. Since I think I, and the story I wrote with Sam Amick this morning is, I would say that's probably going to be the focus of this episode.
Yeah, well, you've already done so much of the heavy lifting here. I mean, we're kind of talking not so much about you, but about the work that you put out, right? And I'd love to just get more context here because it obviously seems like a very odd power struggle because it's not like a traditional tug of war, I would say. His position, Bob Vulgaris's position, is so unique. And I don't know that we've seen anything like this before. I mean, can you guys come up with any corollaries?
I think there is one. We probably don't know about it, right?
Right.
And that's a credit to the reporting Tim and Sam did to uncover just how much influence Bob has amassed in his time in Dallas. I mean, it's a very nebulous role, you know? Like, what did you know? What do you really know about Bob Vulgaris before this story, right? You knew he was the guy on Twitter, and you knew he was, you know, analytics guy, and he worked for the Mavericks. You didn't hear a lot for the last several years. So if there was a corollary going on, I don't know about it, which I think is by design. I don't think, I mean, they didn't advertise that Bob was, you know, assuming this level of power behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, so Tim, what are some of the differences just in their approach since Bob has been on board there? Just, you know, kind of walk us through it a little bit. I mean, how different is his vision from the Mavs front office?
Yeah, just go, well, one quick slight step back. I think the Mavericks have always had an interesting power dynamic that never always made sense to me. It's always been something I've been interested in. And you know, when I hear this or that or whatever about the way that they end up making decisions, it's usually not a linear or a consistent way. Like Mark Cuban's the most powerful person, but when he chooses to defer and for what reasons and to who and to, you know, who he's listening to the most at the time, all of that stuff, I think, you know, has never had a coherent, cohesive level of, or, you know, just like order of operations, if you will. And so I think that's very interesting. In terms of, you know, how the team looks different over the past years and you know, with an influence of Bob, a very analytically minded person who wanted to bring Luka into the team. With Luka on the roster, he wanted to build this specific offense around it. I think you can see a lot of the steps and a lot of the way that, you know, this has been a roster who wants to run spread pick and roll around Luka and wants to put two-way defenders with him. And they've tried repeatedly with DeLon Wright and with Josh Richardson. You know, they've brought in players who supplement and complement that vision. And I don't think it's a vision that is only held by one person, to be clear either. You know, I don't look at Bob and say, well, he wanted to do things one way and everybody else was just like, no. But Mark was listening to him. I mean, I'm an analytically minded person as well. And I tend to think that building that, you know, that sort of team around Luka is probably the right way to go. And in a lot of ways,
you get to the playoffs faster, right? Like, I mean,
for sure.
It's going to be great in the regular season. I think the most important question to ask is this how Luka wants to play?
Right.
You know, that's the only thing that matters. You know, how Carlisle wants to coach or how Bob Vulgaris wants them to play doesn't matter. And I would guess Luka probably likes this way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think he obviously loves it. I think that, you know, the mixed... Did we talk about the mixed messaging of what Carlisle... we didn't on the podcast, I think, because we recorded that morning. And then afterwards, there was exit interviews last week on Monday. And there was, you know, quotes from Mark later that week. So it was Mark and Rick and Donnie all saying slightly different things about Luka should have the ball less and assist more. And then Rick was like, well, we just need to bring in a ball handler to make sure that, you know, we reduce the burden on him. And Mark said something similar. But then Rick, when he was asked about the type of player that's going to fit next to Luka, described a 3-and-D wing. And I think that's a big question. You know, it comes down to every decision is made through the lens of Luka at this point. That's something we tried to communicate with the story. And I think that's obvious. That's how the NBA works. When you get to the point that you have a star of this magnitude and you really have to care about his timeline and what's going on and what's, you know, what's going ahead with him and how you build around him, you have to think about, you know, okay, what is this person want? And, you know, if we have a different idea for the team that doesn't jive with his own, you have to convince him. And there's another thing that, you know, just consistently Bob didn't communicate these things well when he did have interactions with players, because players didn't like interacting with them. That, you know, a lot of them, you know, for this story, there was, you know, we have a reporting that the locker room was just frustrated by this person who, you know, and that's, you know, that's where the rigid rotations come from and things like that. There was just frustration with them all around, you know, the league, the team, wherever. And I think that's, you know, that's something that we put in the story pretty accurately.
Well, I mean, and we have talked on this show about the rigidity in the rotations and how, you know, that was a little bit counter to the way Carlisle has coached traditionally. And we didn't see a lot of the adjustments during the season. And Mike, we talked about it. It was a thing.
Right. Yeah. Then, you know, now we have some explanation for why that is.
Yeah. And I mean, I got to think that's pretty rare. Not that the analytics department had or someone in an analytics capacity has input on lineups. That's common. But to have that sort of control, I think has got to be pretty rare.
Especially when it comes to a coach who he's won the only championship in the history of the organization. Now, there's also been a lot of, you know, I wouldn't say flameouts, but there hasn't been anywhere near that level of success since then, right? This team has not gotten out of the first round since they won a title. And we are going on, we just hit the 10-year anniversary of said NBA title. But this isn't just some coach. This is the most successful right. coach in the history of the organization.
Yeah.
Well, I think
we view
Tim's
Rick
reporting,
as...
I thought, yeah, kind of reflected that his status in the, you know, in the organization was sort of waning a little bit, and maybe him going along to get along was a great way to kind of try to iron out some of their issues. I mean, is this a thing, like, Tim? Am I following the trail correctly?
Yeah, I mean, it's what we've talked about in this podcast a million times. We put it in the piece. It's not that Rick as a coach doesn't consistently get the most out of players. We all agree that he does. And when we look at the failure to even advance past the first round over the past decade, there are people in the Mavericks fandom sphere and on Twitter who like to, you know, immediately point fingers at Carlisle. And we never have, because, you know, we do feel like this is a person who, you know, tactically is his acumen there is, you know, proven time and time and time again. But you have to look again through the lens of Luka. And if Luka is someone who is tuning him out, or if Luka is someone who just doesn't view him as a, you know, as a figure that he wants to, you know, go to war with and go into the future with, you know, that's something you have to consider. And that's very clearly where the reporting took us, is that, you know, it was something that, you know, from Mark on down, everybody in the franchise, you know, their roles and their, you know, the level of influence they had over the team were going to be examined. And, you know, so I think that's how it relates to Luka specifically. It should be noted that, you know, we didn't report that Luka is out here specifically trying to use influence to oust Rick or something like that. I think it's right. Actually a clear sign that he wasn't, by just immediately saying, in the exit interview, yeah, I'm going to sign the extension. More or less, he said that, you know, he's like, I think you know mm-hmm. the answer to that. Yeah. That seemed like a moment where, sure, if If Luka was out here trying to get something done, then he would have had that hanging over the team's future where it would have been leveraged. And so I don't think that's the case. I don't view it that as the case. So, you know, I think that's, you know, it's in the reporting, but you have to kind of read between the lines, and I'm happy to enunciate that. But I do think the team is viewing his influence and what he wants going forwards. And I think that's crucial. That's crucial to every decision they make, and each step of the way they have to think about, all right, is this something that's going to make Luka more happy and more tied to this franchise and, you know, boost his desire to want to be here long term? Or is he to a point where, you know, he sees the player empowerment era and the movement that Stars are capable to make? And even though that's years down the road, that is something that already a good, capable front office and a team owner like Mark Cuban has to be thinking about and is thinking about. And I think that just plays into a lot of the dynamics here.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absurd amount of money on this extension, but I've waited years for someone to just sign the qualifying offer who's not Greg Monroe, like someone who, like Luka. I thought Ben Simmons might be that guy, but, you know, so much money to turn down. That's real leverage there. But like you said, the way he seemed coming out of those exit interviews did not seem like a guy who's sitting here trying to, you know, politic his contract into more power. I think he's probably the most powerful guy in the organization.
Yeah, after the owner, right? And I think if
maybe not, before, right? Like,
yeah, Mark Cuban can't guarantee a title by himself, but Luka Doncic can come close to it maybe with the right supporting cast.
Yeah, in terms of who is wielding the power, it's definitely Mark. Yeah, but in terms of Luka getting what he wants because he's a star player in the NBA and that is how the NBA works, absolutely, I would say the power of, you know, the team and their future revolves around Luka.
I think one of the takeaways I had through the editing and through the, you know, the reading of this story and is just, look, as this has come out, obviously this has been a nuclear bomb on Twitter. I've been seeing it all day, not just in Dallas, but throughout NBA sources. And predictably, a lot of Mavs fans have a lot of consternation about what's going on, or are very alarmed and very worried. If there is one thing that I took away, maybe this is, you know, I don't know how obvious this point is, but it probably should be made, that should, I suppose, make Mavs fans feel a little better. It's that they aren't as, you know, for years there's been this narrative of Dallas's stability. We know what Dallas is. It's the same three guys in charge. It's Cuban, it's Donnie, it's Rick, all day, every day. Well, what we did not know was that even if those three people are the figureheads of power, that is not, they haven't been as complacent with those three people making all the choices as we probably thought for the last several years. So it isn't as though it's, we're just going to go business as usual, go down with the ship. Whatever we did 10 years ago that won us a title, it'll be fine. It'll all work out. Behind the scenes, they clearly, at least Mark Cuban clearly has thought, we have to shake things up. Has this been the right way to go about it? I don't know. Is Bob Vilgaris the right guy to do that shakeup? I don't know. But what we know for sure is that... Go ahead.
Well, he hasn't. I think if you dramatically want to shake up the team, you change the power structures at will, or, you know, at B, that do exist. And Donnie Nelson has been with this team for 15, 16 years. Right. And, you know, the piece doesn't really talk about Donnie. I don't think it's complimentary to him either. You know, he was the one who spearheaded three trades that didn't really work out, all three of them. And so when you look at it in that context, you know, this team has been well known around the league for, you know, just keeping people in place consistently over time. You know, this has been a reputation they developed over a decade, not over, you know, the past 3 years. And so I do think it's both fascinating that they are bringing in that they brought in a new voice who had a lot of sway and had a lot of influence over the decisions they made, while also keeping that same structure. And that's exactly where so much of this confusion came from, where people were people around the league, other executives were like, who should I actually be talking to at this point? You know, am I talking to someone who, you know, only makes decisions if it's greenlit above him or something like that? And that's such an interesting through line for a team to make changes in the exactly the ways that you were talking about. And lead a slightly different vision of how basketball operates and what you should be trying to do on the court, while also leaving the same structures in place. It's very obvious to imagine how conflict would arise from that. I mean, it's not difficult at all. Like, that is how it works, and especially at such a high level of sports organizations like this, where everybody around them, even the people in front offices, and even the people in ownership, and even the people who are just making decisions on a day-to-day basis, that, you know, everybody has such a high level of competitiveness that just permeates and broods and you know, steers around everything. And, you know, I think it's clear that mistakes were made. It's not just clear. Like, it's very, very obvious that the way that they approached this power shift was just not managed in a way that, you know, led to a front office that was functional enough. And, you know, say what you will of the moves that they made. We talked about how Game 7 was an indictment on the front office, an indictment on the roster on Luka, because when your best player scores 46 and 14 and you're not even competitive in the final minute, you know, that has to be.
Things,
you know, there's
wrong.
Nobody else to put that on but the front office.
I guess my point is simply that they are a lot closer to a tipping point in how they changing how they operate than what we probably publicly expected, right? I mean, that's the real thing. If there is ever a revolution in this front office, it turns out that it will not be nearly as abrupt as it might seem from the outside, because they've been, for the last 3 years, there have been real changes behind the scene. Like Tim said, not the way you probably want to go about it. Easy to see how this can lead to a lot of tension, but they're not complacent. I think that is probably something we could safely conclude. They didn't just sit there and say, oh, the same three guys who got us the title 10 years ago, they're unchecked. Clearly, there have been checks. Now, what does that mean going forward? That's the real question here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Tim, the question to you is, do you expect this to continue? Like, is this going to be the power structure for next season? Do you expect changes? Or is this going to be more of the slow turnover that's going to take maybe a couple more years to complete?
I'd be shocked if there wasn't changes this summer. You know, I think everything is pointing to that direction. As someone with an analytics mind and you know, kind of viewing the sport that way, if it's Bob in a role where, you know, he is advising in the ways that, you know, he was during the stretch of the season after he wasn't physically with the team anymore, okay, I could hear out the reasoning behind that, and it, maybe it's, in that case, it's Donnie moving on. If it's purely Bob just saying, you know, the team looking at Bob and saying, you know, we just can't have someone who, you know, is in this role without, you know, the, let me think about how to say this. If it's the team looking at Bob and saying, you know, your role as it was established, you know, ran rampant way beyond the boundaries of what it was supposed to be, it could be that too. Maybe it's something else that I don't even see, or, you know, at minimum, you know, it's just stuff that I've heard, speculation or ideas or whispers about. Like, that seems to be, you know, whatever it is, I would be very surprised if the power structure didn't change at all. And to some level, it's always going to be Mark at the top steering the ship. He is the most powerful person in the organization. You know, as you know, certainly on a day-to-day level in terms of making decisions about how the team is going. That's him, as we talked about. And I think the bigger question and the concerns that were floated at Mark from people who, you know, don't have any reason to say so except for the fact that, you know, they've seen it themselves and they've heard about it and all that. Is that, you know, is Mark someone who is going to figure out, you know, exactly why things went wrong and, you know, push things in the right direction? And I think that's where the concerns come from. And that's the internal concerns and fears that, you know, nobody wants to look back in 5 years and say, we really messed up the Luka situation. You know, this was our chance to build a contending team, a contending title team. Once again, something they haven't done in a decade and have really missed on consistently throughout their, you know, inability to build a, you know, sign free agents and put a team around Dirk. Nobody wants to look back and say, you know, shit, this is where we're at and we could have handled things better. And I think it's reached, you know, this summer, it was always going to reach a breaking point and it was always going to reach a moment where changes had to be made. And I think this story, you know, certainly gets ahead of it to a degree. But the reason we were able to report the story is because things were circulating and forming and coming up this summer specifically, where I feel very strongly that something will change. Very curious to see what it is.
Mike, any closing thoughts here as we wrap up the pod?
No, I think we already knew this was going to be a defining summer for probably the next half decade of this franchise. Now there are even more stakes thrown on top of that. So it is going to be must-see viewing the entire way because the decisions they make will affect a lot.
Yeah, and it's not going to be quiet on the basketball front either. Like they have other stuff. They have to build a basketball team.
Oh yeah,
not just fix whatever's happening in the front office. So
right, I mean that's how much have we talked about that? I mean you know, you look at the roster itself. You know, there's KP isn't in the story at all. There's questions about him. You know, there's questions about, you know,
Tim Hardaway, man.
Is it a 3-and-D wing or is it a secondary ball handler? Like, can you sign or trade for or acquire some way a secondary ball handler that fits next to Luka, that Luka wants to play with, that Luka is willing to give up the ball to? You know, these are all big questions that we've discussed at length, and you know, it's not stuff we need to report on. You know, it's not something that I need to drop a story Monday morning and you know, say, you know, these are the big questions for the Mavericks off seasons. I think anybody, you know, who follows this team and sees, you know, what it's looked like over the past couple seasons and what it's looked like in playoff series against the Clippers. Yeah, we know. So I think that's it. We'll do a quick, you know, just a quick pod. Just wanted to kind of talk about the, you know, the bigger context of some of the stuff we reported. It was all on The Athletic, theathletic.com/77minutes in heaven. Should be discount codes there that you can subscribe through. And yeah, I think the reporting and the story stands for itself. It, you know, we didn't go over every single detail in there. I don't think we needed to, you know, go check that out and, you know, consider what we talked about and the framing of that. And we'll be back at some point down the road. We'll see when and where, but you know, stay subscribed to the feed. We'll have something soon, I'm sure. Thanks, guys. Talk soon. Don't fight the future. Please be nice to Luka. Future four-time MVP.
That is a wrap.